Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. The early version of this show, next week back to regular scheduled time. It's a Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, Dr. Greg Roscoe, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, 2,500 miles away, a bagel inside of me now and a cup of joe out here in Los Angeles. 347-205-9631 if you hear it live. If you want to catch it after, you're sitting around, you're at a beach somewhere where it's 70 degrees, you're clearing out snow wherever the heck part of the country you're in, catch it on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Doc, the threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And you're bringing another great guest that's been on here before onto the show.
Mark, thank you very much. You know, we do have a great guest, and things are going well. You know, just in general now, we're getting very busy. I've got several guests calling on an ongoing basis wanting to be on the program, which is, you know, super. Plus, we have a lot of great listeners. People can get a hold of me, as you have been, GJRMD, 308outlook.com. Today, we have Mr. Darren Schindler. He is a senior partner in a very prestigious accounting firm here in Pittsburgh, and would like to talk about, you know, taxes. And, you know, this is tax month, and Mr. Schindler's an expert at this. We have a lot of good points we'd like to talk about, and I'd like to introduce Darren. Darren, good morning. You've been a friend of the show, and, you know, it's tax time for you, and I know it's a very busy time of year. How are you, sir?
Good. Glad to be on the show. Enjoy it each time I'm on, and it is very busy. This is April 1st. So we have a big filing deadline for all the listeners have a filing deadline as well, April 18th, 2023, to get your 2022 individual income tax return filed.
Wow. So that the time is going by. And, you know, Darren, we have a lot of important questions, I know, that, you know, are important with tax time. You know, early this morning, I received a text from a patient, and I wanted to prepare you a little bit. Can you give us a little bit of history on income tax? They had interest in that, and, you know, how was income tax initially collected in this country? Can you help us with that one?
Sure. So, you know, you gave me a little heads up on the question, so I went and did some research, and, you know, after the Revolutionary War, way back then, the Constitution gave Congress the power to impose taxes and levies. Now, at that point, that was not an income tax. It was an excise tax, and those taxes were charged on alcohol, tobacco, some other goods and services. Really, the first time this country saw an income tax, it was created during the Civil War to raise revenue for that war. There was a department created at that time. It was a precursor to the IRS, and they had an income tax. The income tax was for the federal government, but it was administered and collected by each state. They also at that time broadened the excise tax to pretty much include all commodities, corn, tea, tobacco, et cetera. So then after about 10 years, that system was abandoned. And then in 1909, the first corporate income tax. So corporations were subject to an income tax through a voluntary compliance system, file your return, calculate your income tax, submit it. Then in 1913, the first I guess it's the second, but the current individual income tax system was enacted, and both of these taxes were under the 16th Amendment of the United States Constitution. That tax was imposed on income, and I have here some samples of what the tax rates were back then. Now, it was still a progressive system. Pardon me, go ahead.
Yeah, that would be a very interesting point. What were the tax rates, 100 years ago?
Yeah, so it was 1%. The tax was 1% on income from $1 all the way up to $20,000, then 2% from $20,000 to $50,000, 3% on $50,000 to $75,000. It continued that way, and then the highest tax rate was 7% on income above $500,000. Now, I would imagine 100 years ago, that was a very rare individual to have more than $500,000 of income. But the highest rate at that time was 7%. I can compare and contrast that to the current rates if you'd like.
Sure.
Okay. So now, unlike 1% all the way up to 7%, the minimum rate we have is 10%, and that's on the first 10,000 or thereabout of your income. And then it goes to 12% up to 40,000. 22% up to 90,000, 24% up to 170. It continues all the way up to all income above 540,000 is taxed at 37%. So 30% higher than it was a little over 100 years ago.
Yes. Well, Darren, just along those lines, did the Carnegies pay taxes and the Mellons and the Scaifes? All these entrepreneurs of the past. So they did pay income tax?
Sure. Yeah, income tax was paid. Now, as the system of taxing, grew and incentives were put into the system through the passage of laws, certain things where the country wanted to, say, develop more real estate or buildings, they would allow certain deductions that previously weren't contemplated, or accelerated deductions for things like depreciation, or if they were trying to encourage research and development, if you did certain types of research and development and incurred costs related to that, then you would get a credit against your taxes, which is better than a deduction. So the IRS would create incentives to channel investment dollars, and the benefit you would get is reduced taxes. But sure, all those folks who, were creating these enormous institutions that we have today, they paid income taxes as well.
Very good. As far as the government then, it seems that maybe they used the taxes but were very smart in developing, different industries and making our country grow, many, many years ago. So it looks like someone had a little bit of smarts, didn't they?
Yeah, sure. As things like the railroad, the Transcontinental Railroad, or some of our highway systems, or the development of the vehicle, and, as I mentioned, real estate. They would incentivize through certain tax credits or reduced tax rates or accelerated depreciation so that people looking to invest money. When you're investing money in an industry, you tie up all that capital, and then if you have a large tax bill, it's hard to keep the money invested in the business and pay your taxes. So they would come up with incentives where the money could stay invested rather than going to the federal government. They also do that with charitable deductions. The reason why they allow a deduction against your income for donating to a charity is because the charity is performing a function that would otherwise fall to the government, helping homeless or feeding the poor or all the various things that charitable organizations do, you know, someone might say, oh, well, that's also a function of the government. So if we can reduce the government's burden, a donation to them should be deductible against my taxes.
You know, Darren, I think that's excellent. Very good explanation. You know, where did that thinking come from? You know, is it a British-type system that where we learned to do that? Or did we have good thinkers, good entrepreneurs, economists in our own country that helped develop that?
I think that certainly a lot of the systems we have in place were originated in Europe. And then I think probably, you know, since America wasn't as far along in its development, it came up with some of its own ideas to develop such a big piece of land, you know, over 100 years. But I think that, you know, our legislature, as critical as we can be of them, there were ideas that did help this country grow through incentives in the tax system.
So it's kind of a positive situation, even though none of us enjoy paying taxes, but it was very positive in making our country as great as it is today.
Sure. You know, a country needs to, you know, certainly protect its citizens with a military, which is expensive.
Of course.
But also needs to have infrastructure, to develop roads, schools, education systems, healthcare systems. They are independent, but they certainly get benefit from the government because most of our healthcare systems are tax-free organizations. And so donations to those, in fact, can be a charitable deduction as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, along with what government does as well, it's the postal system, correct? I mean, that's one of the main functions that our government does do as well. And, again, we know it's in trouble financially today, correct? But indeed,
yes,
it is a government function. You know,
and
Darren,
police,
if we talk
about fire,
police, yes. So we have a lot of good things that help keep our life stable and be able to go ahead and do the things we want to do. And we do that through the taxation system. So maybe there is some positivity here with income tax.
That is
you know, Darren, if we go, right, you know, if we go on, all right, we kind of thank you for the excellent history lesson. You know, if we go on, what are the forms that one can use to file income tax? You know, if we start there very basically, what are the forms that are used to record, report, and to pay taxes on? Can we go there?
Sure, sure. So the IRS's form for an individual income tax return is Form 1040. And you can get forms online at irs.gov, www.irs.gov. You can actually file your income tax return electronically right there in their website. There are other forms that go along with the Form 1040, one of those forms being a Schedule A, where you would itemize your deductions, certain types of deductions that are allowable that we discussed. You can deduct medical costs. You can deduct state and local income taxes. You can deduct your mortgage interest, and you can deduct charitable contributions. The sum of those are called your itemized deductions, and that's on Form Schedule A.
Okay.
And that would go against your wages, your interest, your dividends, which are reported on Form 1040. Now, one thing to note, some people say, who must file a tax return?
Right.
And so if you are an individual filing a single return, you're not married, and you have income over $12,950, then you must file an individual income tax return. And if you're married and you want to file jointly with your spouse, then if you have more than $25,900, this is for the tax year 2022, then you must file an individual income tax return. So $25,900 for a married filing joint taxpayer. Income over that, you must file a tax return.
And, Darren, does it make any difference where that income comes from? You know, could it be from an employer or dividends? You know, are there different areas of income that would be excluded from that, or is all part of that income?
So when you know, the typical taxpayer would have a W-2 where they have reported to them their wages from their employer. There's some figures on there that you would include on your tax return. You would have, if you have interest on a bank account and you're earning interest, the amount of interest you earn. If you have an investment with either a stock or a mutual fund and that generated dividends during the year, that gets reported. If you're already retired and you're receiving pension or distributions from your employer plan, maybe you had a 401k or a pension, then those amounts would be includable in your income. If you're a sole proprietor, you have a small business that you're operating, you would file form Schedule C. And on that Schedule C, you would determine your income from the operation of that business and report that on your tax return. Maybe you have lottery winnings. You played the Powerball and struck it rich. You can report that on your individual income tax return. That is correct. All these things are subject to tax. Now, Social Security is also subject to tax, but it's a little more complicated in determining what amount is subject to tax.
You know, Darren, if people are getting income through a 1099, how does that work?
So there's different types of 1099s. There's a 1099 which reports, say you were a subcontractor. You worked for someone, but you were not an employee, and they paid you for your services, and they reported to you at the end of the year on a form 1099 NEC. NEC stands for non-employee compensation. Then that amount is reported on your tax return. Now, you can also get 1099s from a broker or a bank or a savings account, and those get reported on your tax return as well.
And thank you.
Now,
there,
you could
have, go ahead.
Go ahead, please. I was going to say a 1099 might also report to you the sale of stocks or bonds or other types of investments, which could generate what we call capital gain. So you bought a stock for $5,000. You held it for several years. It appreciated to $10,000. You sell it. The broker will report on a 1099-B proceeds, and then that gain of $5,000 gets reported on what we call a Schedule D on your individual return.
What about rental income? If you're a proprietor, sole proprietor, and you have rental properties, how is that reported?
That's a great question. A lot of people you know, do have rental properties, and the gross rent that you receive from your tenant, it's reported as gross rents, but now all the deductions that are allowable for operating that rental activity would be mortgage, interest, insurance, real estate taxes, repairs, maintenance. You might have, and then you also get to depreciate that property. And to the extent you would provide like a refrigerator or stove or other appliances, you can depreciate all those items as well. And the sum of all those deductions get netted against the rental income, and the net gets reported on your tax return. And that's
Darren,
a Schedule
thank
E.
You. Okay. You know, I have a question here about, what is depreciation? This listener hears that word. What does it mean? How does it help us? Go ahead.
Sure. So when you buy an asset, let's say you buy you know, the house that we were talking about that you're renting, and you pay, just to make up a number, you pay $300,000 for that house. And now the cost of that house, you get to deduct, but only so much per year. And you're depreciating the use of that house. So let's say you get to depreciate that over 30 years. It's actually 27.5 if it's residential real estate. So you would divide 300,000 by 27.5. You'd get somewhere around, you know, $10,000 or $11,000.
Yep.
And you can deduct that $11,000 of depreciation against that gross rental income. So it's a ratable system for deducting the cost of what it is you're renting. Or if you have a refrigerator or appliance, the life of those is much shorter than real estate. So
surely,
a refrigerator, you could depreciate over 5 years. So if you paid, you know, $500 for the refrigerator, you'd get $100 a year for 5 years.
So that, Darren, that number, that depreciation number, comes off of income, not the taxes due.
That is correct. It's a deduction, not a tax credit. So in the situation where you have gross rent for the year of, let's say, $20,000, you have costs of maintenance, you know, insurance, taxes, $5,000, and now you have depreciation of $10,000, so now your deductions are $5,000 and $10,000 or $15,000 against the $20,000 of rent. So you'd have income from that property, even though you were paid $20,000, your taxable income would only be $5,000.
And that's the beauty of using real estate in one's portfolio tax-wise, correct?
No question. I mean, real estate, the Internal Revenue Code has a significant amount of laws and incentives for the development of real estate, and depreciation is one of those. Where, say, if you buy a stock, when you buy a stock and you spend, say, you bought a lot of stock, $300,000, that cost is just that. It's just a cost. It doesn't provide you a deduction. You're waiting for that stock to appreciate, and you get to offset that cost against the proceeds when and if you sell that in the future. Real estate, however, that $300,000, you don't have to sit there, wait until you sell it to get the deduction. You get to ratably begin to depreciate it immediately, even though it is appreciating in value. So it provides you a deduction, even though it's going up in value, which is unlike stock or bonds or other investments where the cost just sits there until you sell it. This one, you get to ratably deduct against your income.
Beautiful. Excellent explanation. You know, Darren, one thing, I have many more questions with regard to, you know, 401ks, pensions, you know, other deductions, et cetera. One thing that I have, again, another email here, how do our listeners use an accountant? What is the preparation that's necessary to come to an accountant? What does an accountant expect to see when a client comes in to see him or her? Can you help me there?
Sure. So the various institutions that an individual interacts with, whether it's their employer, a bank, the person who loaned them money to purchase their house, all of these documents begin to arrive shortly after a year end. So when 2022 came to an end on December 31st, during the month of January and February, a taxpayer starts receiving tax documents. Normally on the envelope of that tax document, it'll even say important tax document inside. So you want to collect all those things. That would be your W-2, your 1099, mortgage interest that you paid would be on a 1098. As you collect all those things, keep them in one place. Now, you may have things that aren't going to be summarized on a nice, neat form that you get at the end of the year. Those things would be the real estate taxes that you paid or charitable
yes.
contributions that you made. You should summarize that to provide to your tax preparer as well. And then if you are, say, a little bit more complicated in your entrepreneurial way, you
yes.
know, where you have rental property or you are a sole proprietor with your own business, you'll want to do some accounting of your own. Make sure you've tracked all of your revenue or your gross rents, all the expenses related to the production of that income, and summarize
Got
those
it.
So that when you go to the accountant, you know, he'll be able to prepare your tax return easily. Now, he may have ideas and questions for you that provide you with deductions that you weren't even aware of or an acceleration
yes.
of those deductions, but you should have the basic things that I described ready for him or her.
Good. Or her, yes. And, you know, Darren, just a point with that, and then we'll get on. Is it good to see the accountant before year end? You want to see the accountant maybe in September or October before the end of December. Is that a wise move, or should you
sure.
just wait till go ahead.
So when you go and you're proactive like that, or maybe your accountant even reaches out to you and says, hey, you know, there's 3 months left to this year. If we can get an idea of your income so far this year, maybe we can do some planning. There are some things that you can do between now and the end of this calendar year that will reduce your taxes. Let's say you had sold a stock and you had a large capital gain, and now you were going to have to pay a large tax bill.
Yes.
Well, your accountant might suggest, if it makes sense, hey, you have this stock over here that's actually reduced in its value. And if you sold it, it would create a capital loss. We can harvest
okay.
that loss, that's what we call it, and offset it against
yes.
this capital gain and reduce your taxes. You know, certainly
wow.
we need the investment advisor, you know, to make sure
of
that
course.
Was a smart move financially. But if it is, then
yes.
you could reduce your tax bill.
And so that overall, using an accountant could be very, very beneficial. Where I wanted to get into also, and Mr. Mancini in L.A. is chomping here. We've got questions all over the place. But as far
okay.
as trying to prepare your taxes on your own or going to Walmart to have your taxes done, let's pick up that right after the question session, okay?
Sure.
Mr. Mancini, what do you have for Mr. Schindler?
Well, I'll tell you, the show keeps getting popular. It doesn't matter if we move it up a half an hour or what, but let me throw three listener questions, and I'll let you guys get back to this great conversation. Zach coming in from Alpharetta, Georgia, basically says, guys, how come we get taxed on our Social Security when that was income that it should be well-earned that we worked? How come the government taxes on that? That's an interesting question.
Yeah,
it is. It's Mr.
Schindler?
It's a controversial item without question. So in 1983, the Tax Act that was passed included the ability to tax Social Security, which is, of course, taxes that you paid into a system that you're now receiving as a benefit in retirement. And now they're turning around and taxing it again. Now, there is an amount that isn't taxable. So I made some notes here. Just let me find them here quickly. Okay. So for those people, if your gross income from all sources is under $25,000 if you're single and under $32,000 for married joint, then your Social Security isn't subject to tax. But once it goes over that, up to 50% of your Social Security benefit is subject to income taxes.
Wow.
Now, if your income from all sources goes over $34,000 for an individual or 44,000 for married, up to 85% of your Social Security benefit is subject to tax. And never more than 85%. You know, 15% would never be subject to tax. But so it's a significant amount of tax, and the exemption is not all that high before it in fact starts to get subject to tax. So I certainly sympathize with all taxpayers that are receiving Social Security and have to pay income tax on it, but it's the law that we have.
And Darren, go ahead, Mark.
Well, now Zach is basically firing another question, and I want to get to these other two before I give it back to you. But basically says, how about if you owe the government, can they take your Social Security? Because he's basically saying, from what he understands, they can only take a percentage of your Social Security if you owe the government on back taxes.
That is correct. The IRS, if there's taxes owed, and since the IRS and the Social Security are both controlled by the federal government, they can go over to your Social Security benefit and begin to withhold it directly from Social Security before it even gets to you to pay those back taxes. Unfortunately, I don't know the maximum amount that they can take. I don't know if it's 10 or 20%. I don't have that ready for today, but they definitely – it's not all of it, but they can begin to reduce your benefit and withhold right at the source.
Wow. Very good question. That's something you don't hear a lot about. Let me throw
two more. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon, a regular on this show, basically says, how about when you have property tax? You guys were talking about it. Do you, when you're renting property and everything, how do the benefits work to a landlord or something with the tax breaks? It seems like they're squeezing out the sole proprietor today.
Wow. Mr. Schindler, could you help answer that one?
Sure. So property taxes, let's say there are two buckets where property taxes fall. Property taxes for the individual that is related to the house that he lives in, that gets deducted on Schedule A as an itemized deduction against your income. But there are significant limitations, meaning the sum of all of your property taxes, your state and local income taxes, potentially your sales tax that you pay, the sum of all those things, which could be a very large number, gets limited to no more than $10,000. So there's a big limitation on taxes. Now, property taxes that you're paying in this other bucket, and that's property taxes related to a rental property, those are fully deductible against that rental income. They are not subject to that $10,000 limit. So when you're preparing your return or having your accountant prepare the return, make sure that you keep those types of taxes separate and distinct from one another. These ones are related to the house that I live in, and these ones are related to the house that I'm renting because they're subject to different limitations.
And along those same lines, Mr. Schindler, you have a variable rate mortgage, and, you know, the interest keeps going up on it. Is there a limit that you're able to deduct, or, you know, you can deduct it all because the value of the mortgage, say, has stayed the same, and you haven't gone into a bigger house, just the rate has gone up?
So the limit for deducting a mortgage interest is prior to, let me see here, is it, I have a note on this, sorry.
Thank you.
Here it is. Okay. So if your mortgage is up to $1 million, so a very large mortgage, and that was before December 15th, 2017, that date of that mortgage, you can deduct interest up to the $1 million borrowed. So if you have $2 million borrowed, you know, very large house,
yes,
you would only be able to deduct half of that interest. Now, after December 15th, 2017, that limit was reduced from $1 million to $750,000. So you can only deduct the mortgage interest regardless of the rate. If it goes up, if it goes down, you still get to deduct all that, but only on the part of the mortgage up to $750,000. And all of that gets reported to you on Form 1098.
Got it. So these athletes, movie stars that have these $20 million homes with an $18 million mortgage, they're not able to deduct all that interest then?
No, no, no. Very little of it if you have a mortgage that large.
Wow. Very good. All right, Mr. Go ahead, Mr. Mancini.
Yeah, let me throw one more. Albert from Poway coming in. He has two questions on it, and I'll get it back to you as this show is starting to really fly. He basically says Manny Machado plays down here in San Diego, but his residence and everything is in Florida, so he doesn't have to pay the California tax. He has a Florida residence, which I believe Florida is like Rhode Island. You don't pay state tax. Is that correct? My other question is, when you get inheritance or something, you have to pay taxes on that, but if it's a medical settlement or something, you don't have to pay taxes on that. Am I correct on that? So he's bringing the Manny Machado where he lives in another state but plays in a state but resides in a different state, and then the medical compared to the inheritance. These are excellent questions these days from these people.
The state of Florida is a state that does not have an individual income tax. And so all the residents there receive that benefit. There's a few other states, Texas, Nevada, a few others that don't have an individual income tax. But California has a very high one. I think its top rate is even 13%. So when someone earns money in that state from, you know, whatever activity, from athletics or their job just takes them there, but they live in Florida, Florida doesn't charge any income tax. Now, they probably have to pay income tax on what they earned while in that state. So let's say, you know, a big athlete earns, you know, $1 million for playing baseball. I'm not sure who that athlete is, my apologies, but you know, if he's a baseball player and he plays games within that state, each of those games would be subject to California income tax, but anything that was out of that state would not be. Now, if he lived in that state full time, all of the games, no matter where they were played, would be subject to California income tax. So apportioning your income among states does get very complicated.
Yes, my God. So he probably has a very good accounting firm, I would think.
I would think, yes.
Are you for Mr. Mancini, or may I take over?
You can take over, my friend.
Good. We're getting close here. I have a few more questions for you, Darren. You know, what about having an accounting professional do the taxes versus going to Walmart or doing your own taxes? What's the thinking here? You know, what can our listeners think about, you know, as far as getting help with this situation? You know, is the tax code getting more complicated? You know, should they consult a professional? You know, is there savings in doing that? What has your experience shown us? You know, Daryl, what's the pearl here?
Sure. So the benefit of going to a tax professional is that because the system is extremely complicated and getting more and more complicated each year, and also there are always new laws, expiring laws, and so keeping up with what all those laws are and how you might be able to reduce your income taxes is very difficult for any individual.
Yes.
And even some smaller or tax preparers. So the more complicated your situation is, then the higher level of professional you should seek out, because that person will be able to think for you and on your behalf and come up with things or ask you questions about your conduct during the year, what you did, how you spent your money and where you spent your money. And these things could reveal deductions that you were unaware of, or that maybe there's an incentive program, or, you know, some people buy an electric vehicle, which is very popular right now. And there's a lot of rules regarding getting a credit. This is a credit, not a deduction. So credits are more valuable because it's a dollar-for-dollar reduction of your individual income taxes. So if you don't know that that's out there, then you'll be missing an opportunity to save yourself a lot of money. So by talking to a professional, he can figure out ways to minimize your income taxes, which is a good thing.
Excellent. And Darren, just, you know, as far as with our listeners, you know, how do you choose an accounting firm? You know, where does one go that's, you know, a blue-collar worker, maybe has a small construction company? You know, does he want, you know, a big-name accounting firm? You know, does he go to the local accounting? You know, does he go to H&R Block? You know, what are some of the rules of the road here?
Sure. So, you know, the accounting profession, its best marketing is through referrals. People who have had a positive experience with the accountant that they're working with, he's helped them save taxes, he's helped them maybe out of some tax controversy issues or an IRS audit. And so when that person is speaking to their friends, or maybe a friend asks them, hey, you know, who do you use? A referral from somebody like that is very valuable because they've had a good experience, and then they can refer you to that person. And now the accountant realizes, hey, a very good client of mine has referred a friend, so I want to treat them very well and do a good job for them as well. So really, referrals are terrific. Now, if you don't have a referral, or if your income tax return is, you know, pretty basic, I think H&R Block does a terrific job. H&R Block is a very large tax preparer. And that's right. And they have a lot of software that helps with the preparation of their return. The fees are, we'll say, reasonable with respect to the expertise that you're receiving. So, And then the larger you get and the more sophisticated your return, you're going to want to seek out, more larger and more qualified. Yes. And then interview. I would say that if you're running a business and you have concern that you're not preparing your tax return correctly, or so, then you should find two or maybe even three accountants and then meet with them, interview them, and see who's, you know, gives you the most comfort with working together.
And where the sweet spot is for you and your company working with that organization.
Exactly.
Thank you. Darren, I have another question here via email. What about child credits, standard deductions for 2022? Can we look at that for a few minutes?
Sure. So
go ahead, please.
There is a child tax credit. A taxpayer can get up to $2,000, and this is a credit, not a deduction. So a $2,000 credit against your income taxes per qualifying child. Now, a qualifying child is defined as a child that has a Social Security number and is under the age of 17 as of the end of 2022. So if they were 16 or under as of the end of 2022, then you can get a credit of $2,000 against your income taxes. Now, if you're single and you have a qualifying child and your income is over $200,000, then that credit of $2,000 begins to reduce. And if you're married, filing jointly, and you have that qualifying child, and your income is over $400,000, then the $2,000 credit begins to phase out as well. But those are pretty high numbers, and so you can get, and that's for each child, $2,000 for each child.
Okay, and they're an H&R Block would know about this as well, correct?
They would, yes, they definitely would.
You know, Darren, thank you. I have another question. I know we're running out of time. We may need to have you back. So,
sure.
I have from a subcontractor. Should he be a subcontractor or should he be an employee? What are the do's and don'ts here? You know, what's a better way to handle his income?
So when you are a subcontractor, you know, certainly a burden of reporting and paying your taxes is increased versus an employee. An employee, it's pretty simple.
You
do the job. Your employer withholds from your compensation all of your state, federal, and local income taxes, your Social Security taxes, your Medicare taxes, and remits those all on your behalf. And then at the end of the year, they give you a W-2, you report your income, and maybe you get a refund. A subcontractor, all those things now fall on him. He's got to report on his tax return the gross income, reduce it by any deductions, which could provide a benefit, pardon me, because some of those deductions you may not have been able to take as an employee. In fact, you probably aren't. But now as a subcontractor, if you're driving to job sites or buying tools or certain equipment to do that job, you get a deduction against that income. However, you do have increased accounting duties and responsibilities, and you have to make all of your own tax payments throughout the year on estimated tax payment vouchers, which are due quarterly. And that gets a little complicated and cumbersome for, you know, your basic taxpayer.
So if someone
Go ahead.
I was just saying, so then for that contractor, they have more accounting-type responsibilities than if indeed they were just an employee working for a large company and receiving a paycheck.
That is correct. So now, as a sole proprietor conducting your business, so if you're whatever, a carpenter or
you have to know
that field, but now you have to also wear an accounting hat and you have to do tax payments and compliance reports. And so as a business owner, you know, you've taken on a lot of functions that you might not be all that familiar with.
Right, and uneducated in as well.
Right.
You know, Darren, we have a few minutes. Can you talk about potential medical deductions for our listeners? What are some of the areas of medical expenses that are deductible, not credit, I don't believe, but deductible in deductions? Can you give us a little bit of a summary?
Sure. So you would want to take these deductions on that form Schedule A, where you're going to itemize other deductions as well, you know, charity, mortgage interest, taxes.
Yes.
And the types of deductions that are allowable for medical purposes are, you know, fees to doctors, dentists, psychiatrists, chiropractors, inpatient care, nursing home care. You can get, if you're trying to stop smoking or lose weight, the costs related to those things for health benefits are deductible. All of your prescription drugs, you know, for heart medicine or insulin or all of those things. If you, you know, had to use an ambulance for transportation, if for dentists, you know, your dental care, false teeth, eyeglasses, the eye exam, hearing aids, if you're paying insurance premiums, if you're paying them on your own, they're deductible. If you are receiving Medicare, but you have to pay part of the Medicare premiums, they're deductible. Wheelchairs, special equipment. Say, you know, for some reason something happened maybe, and now
yes.
you need entry and exit ramps into your house, or widening your doorways or railings inside your house. The installation of all these things are deductible. Porch lifts. So all of these types of medical deductions that are required for living or prescribed under a doctor are deductible.
Wonderful. And Darren, you know, the big thing I would think here is if one's going to H&R Block or going to their accounting people, they need to have documentation of this, correct?
That is correct. You want to be able to substantiate the fact that this cost was incurred and paid by you. So the invoice that you received or the canceled check or both that you used to pay for that cost should be maintained in your records.
Wow. And, you know, thank you. Excellent. You know, Darren, another very broad question, who gets audited? You know, I think our listeners need to realize then as well that there is always a potential audit here. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the IRS has a system for, since the United States is a voluntary compliance system, for the most part, you have to file your own individual income tax return, report the income that you earned, pay the tax or calculate the tax, and then pay it in either through withholdings, estimated payments, or with the return when you file. So that voluntary system, you know, to keep everyone honest, they have sometimes just random audits. They randomly select people for audit so that they can prove that they incurred those costs, that they didn't earn income and didn't report it. But there are certainly things that lead to an audit where maybe the IRS had reported to it income that they're not seeing on your tax return, or the sale of stock that occurred and you didn't report on your tax return. Or let's say you are that sole proprietor conducting your own business and they're looking at your expenses and they seem unreasonable. Or maybe they're thinking, this isn't an expense, this is an asset that you purchased and you don't get the deduction, you should maybe be depreciating that asset rather than deducting it. So there are things that the way you prepare your tax return or maybe missed items that you didn't report could lead to an audit.
And are there other red flags that our listeners should be aware of?
So some people, you know, when we were talking about charitable contributions earlier, most people give gifts of money. And so when you give a gift of money, usually the organization sends you a letter or a piece of correspondence saying thank you and reports the amount, and then you keep the canceled check. But sometimes you might give clothing or furniture. And now, when determining the value of that deduction, if you really should be reporting what they call thrift shop value for, you know, you clean out your closet and you take it to the Goodwill. Some people over-report that value. Or they don't use the proper form 8283 to report that they gave property other than cash. And the IRS may audit you to question whether or not the value you're reporting is reasonable with what you gave. So that's certainly an item that would do that.
That's it. And, you know, if our listeners get an audit, what's the first thing they should do if they get a letter from the IRS? Should they call you?
Certainly all of my clients. Yeah, exactly. Any correspondence. See, the IRS also provides for, if you're being audited, you're allowed to employ a representative to do all of the respondents communication with them. So you can insulate yourself by hiring a professional and giving them a power of attorney. Now that's, you know, a scary word, but the power would only be for that person to represent you in front of the IRS. And the reason why that might make sense, or mostly make sense, is because that person knows the rules They know what they should or shouldn't say when talking to an IRS agent. Not that we're, you know, trying to cheat. It's just sometimes the jargon of an industry, meaning, you know, things
yes.
like cost basis or gross proceeds, all of these words to the individual might be, you know, overwhelming, where when the conversation is between a tax professional and an agent, it's just much smoother. They speak the same
yes.
language. They know the same industry jargon. So it's really good to hire a professional to handle your audit.
Plus your professional is able to explain to you, the taxpayer, maybe the nuances that you weren't aware of. So it could be a
exactly.
very good teaching situation to prevent this from happening in the future.
Agreed. Yes.
Excellent. Mr. Mancini, do you want to wrap this up?
Yeah, let me take one more because they've been chomping at the bit on this one, and then with less than 4 minutes, we'll wrap this thing up. Dalen from Chelmsford, Massachusetts, says his wife runs a daycare. How does that work? Can you write off on every kid you're taking care of, or is that the parents that can write the kid off if they're sending it to a daycare? That's a nice question.
So the parent of the child would be entitled to any child tax credit that we described earlier. The provider of the daycare would not. The provider of the daycare would be able to take any and all expenses that are incurred in providing the daycare services. So if they provide food or and they would also be able to take a deduction for the square footage use of their house. So let's say they have a 2,000-square-foot
oh.
house, and the
yeah.
daycare is using 500 square feet or 25% of the house. Now, they could take 25% of the cost of the house, depreciate it against that daycare revenue, 25% of the utilities, heating, electricity, real estate taxes, insurance, mortgage interest, all the costs that are
oh.
incurred in owning and operating that house, you would get 25% of those costs against that daycare revenue. So that's something that you should be aware
very
of
important.
If that's a service you provide. Yeah, very important.
Wonderful. Mark, you know, also, Darren, is that a red flag, writing off, you know, expenses on your home? I had heard at one time the home office issue was something the IRS looked at very, very judiciously.
It is, because the IRS is aware that certain areas of deduction are also areas for abuse, like the use of a car for business. You know, the travel log and how much is actually for personal use
yeah.
or how much is for business. So there's just this gray area where the calculation might not be following the Queen's rules. And houses are the same thing. You know, maybe it isn't really 25% of the house. It's something less. So, but that does not mean if you're actually incurring these things that you should shy away. If you can substantiate the deduction, you should take it. I would not take a deduction because I was afraid of an audit. If it's something you're incurring and you're following the rules, then by all means, take that deduction.
Excellent. Mr. Mancini, go ahead. Let's wrap this up.
Well, as we wrap this thing up, we got to bring Darren back again. I mean, this is just so helpful, especially this month with taxes and extensions and all that. Got a load of questions, so can't wait to bring him back. Darren, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you in the Pittsburgh greater area.
Sure. So the best way to reach out to me, we have a website, schneiderdowns.com. And I have an email address, dschindler, S-C-H-I-N-D-L-E-R, at schneiderdowns.com. And if you send me an email, I'll be sure to return and see if we should talk.
Thank you. Beautiful.
And, Doc, you're in Pittsburgh, too. Let everybody know how they can get to see your great staff in that area. I wish you guys had offices all over the country. Then we'd be really swamped to the hilt on these things, but little by little, progress over regress and baby steps.
Well, as you've always said, let's keep moving. Let's not give up. And things always get better. But I'd like to thank our listeners. They can get a hold of me, GJRMD308@outlook.com. I want to thank Mr. Schindler. I would like to thank you, Mr. Mancini. Next week, we've got two beautiful professionals, Marianne Costello and Dr. Deborah Gilman, again, talking about some very sad things with this Nashville incident where there were children that were shot. So we'd like to bring that to the fore. But I thank you, and we'll talk to you next week at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time.
For those guys in Pittsburgh, yours truly in Los Angeles, have a blessed one. Let all your friends know and catch the archive on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Have a blessed one, guys, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.